What is happening?
This is, see, this is,
drink some soda, you're gonna need it.
No,
stand very late last
night.
Why is there a bunch of phones? Is he gonna break this?
Yo,
what is going on?
Rabbi, are you gonna break them?
Yeah, we start. Are we safe to start? Okay. The pressure is on. There's so many people. Okay. Anyway, I wanted to talk about a problem. I don't know the solution I have so great, but there's a real problem with, I don't think most people, we ever talk about it. And it's not taiva. See how that, you know, it's a different problem that we don't usually talk about. And, okay. A little bit based on a Rashi in this week's parsha. It says in the parasha that Hashem brought Makas Choshech, 3 days. So Rashi says, why did Hashem bring Makas Choshech for 3 days? So one shot is, Lama Hevi Aleim Choshech, Shohoyu B'Yisrael B'Oysa Ador Rishon. They were in that door Rishon. V'Loya Roitzim Laseis. So they didn't want to go out. U'meizu B'Shloshes Me'afeinah. So during the 3 days of darkness they die. And Hashem killed them then, so the Mitzrayim shouldn't see. Otherwise they would say, you know, the Jews are also dying. So during the Yimei Choshech, the people that didn't want to go out died. Okay, now I have a question to ask you. How many people were this that didn't want to go out?
80%.
So it says in B'Shalach, the Chamushim, right? The Pasuk says that Bnei Yisrael went out. It's a Pasuk. The Chamushim Ota Bnei Yisrael Mer Mitzrayim. So one shot in Chamushim, Rashi says, Echad Mechamisha, 1 out of 5, and 4/5 died, which means the vast majority. But the Medrash says, a different shot, not one out of 50, but one out of 50. And there's a different shot that says 1 out of 500. Right? Pretty amazing. According to Rashi, 4 out of 5 people in Gleisrael did not want to go out of Mitzrayim, and they died in Mitzrayim. According to the Medrash, 499 out of 500 did not want to go out of Mitzrayim, and they died in Mitzrayim. I don't know if you know what that percentage is. That's a lot. Now, it also means you can imagine how many people there were, because there were 600,000 that went out. So if you multiply 600,000 by 500, there's a lot of people that were in Mitzrayim. But okay. But the Maisa, what logic does that make? They're slaves in Mitzrayim. They're being offered to leave. Shem made miracles to leave. Why don't they want to leave? So there is some people that say because there were, these people were rich. But it Rashi doesn't seem to be saying that. I know someone's going to look in the Sisya Chum and find him, because he always shlug me up in the Sisya Chum. But there's someone, the Parship shot is, Rashi doesn't mention anything about people being rich. It's hard to say that 499 out of 500 people in Kleistrel were rich in Mitzrayim, and they didn't want to leave. So why didn't they want to leave? So there's a very basic point, and this is a Yosef I wanted to get to about. There's a psychology. The psychology is that people are afraid of change on some level, right? Everyone knows, it's a well-known thing that when a person's married to a woman marries a husband who abuses her, you know, he beats her, he insults her verbally, physically, so she finally has enough and she gets divorced, and then she remarries, and 9 out of 10 times, the second husband is exactly the same. Why? Because she's comfortable with it. She's attracted. That's what she's attracted to. Without, obviously, intellectually, she would say, no, I'm trying to marry someone different. But emotionally, she feels comfortable with a husband who has the same traits as her previous husband, because that's what she's used to. She meets a guy who's nice to her. Ooh, we feel so funny, so weird. I'm not used to that. Right? So there's a psychology in people that people are locked into what they're used to. And it's when you think about it, it's scary. Because what that means is, in a certain sense, we get used to certain things. We get used to it because here they grew used to something because they grew up in Mitzrayim. It wasn't because they chose it. It wasn't because it was intellectually correct. It was just because that was the society that they were brought up in. They got used to being slaves. They got used to being tortured. They got used to being made fun of. And that's what they're comfortable with. Well, I'm going to be a free man. I'm going to be in charge of the household. I'm going to, you know, me? You know? Now, it's not necessarily intellectual, of course. It's emotional. It's a certain feeling. I don't even know if they could put their finger on it. Dr. Tversky talks a lot about this. If those of you read Dr. Tversky, I don't know if anyone reads Dr. Tversky's books. He has a book, I remember, Generation to Generation, where he tells some, he has a Hasidish, a folktale. I don't know, anyone read the book? About a Hasidish folktale, about a guy who's a wagon driver. And a guy gets on, they takes the wagon driver and says, I want you to go drive me to the city. But I was told that there's a fork in the road, and there's two roads that go to the city. One road has a giant pit in it, so make sure you take the other road. And the guy says, don't worry, I've been a wagon driver for 50 years. I know how to drive. And then they're driving. Sure enough, he gets to the fork in the road, and of course he takes the fork to where the pit is. And he says, well, I told you, you know, there's a giant pit in this way. Don't worry, I've been a wagon driver for 50 years. And of course, what happens is he falls in the pit, and the driver says, amazing thing, I've been a driver for 50 years, and every time I fall into the same pit. Right? So it's a certain comfort level without even thinking. A person does the same things over and over again, and it's scary. Because it's not just you. It's what you're. We went to Rav Hutner. It's a little bit different, but the same idea. Rav Hutner was making fun of us that many of our hashkafas are locked in to things that we're used to, not for low logic. You know, we have many hashkafas that really are not necessarily Toradic or hashkafa. Right? We believe in equality. And all men are created equal. Well, I don't know, is that not Torah Hashkafa? Sure. I'm not sure the Torah Hashkafa. We believe in democracy, right? Democracy is the world's greatest thing. We believe in women's lib, probably. We believe in freedom of the individual. We believe in 5-day weeks. You know, I'm not sure if Hashkafically all these things are right. Rav Hutner made fun of us. He said, we look in the mirror and we see all of us. In those days, we were all clean shaven. So you look at, oh, that's so handsome. You know, who said clean shaven is handsome? Because that's in America, the clean shaven, you know, those days it used to be handsome. Anyway, there are certain hashkafas that we get locked into. You know, we believe that a normal family is two kids and a dog, right? You know, you tell you guys that someone, I had Shabbos, this last Shabbos, you know, I had someone eating in my house. He has 14 kids. He was collecting from Eretz Yisrael. 14 kids? You know, now, it's a bracha. But do we look at it as a bracha? You look at it like a klala, you know? You know? Like, oh, yeah, you poor guy. But there, you know, that's because we grow up in America. And there's certain hashkafas that are in the society. So society has a hashkafa of what's considered successful. So we, without realizing it, we imbibe those hashkafas. Who's a success? Who's a failure? Oh, he's a lo yutzlach. You know, there are definitely, I'm sure, there are certain parents who look at some of their abayim. Oh, he's a rebbe. Oh, you know. He has a business. You know, a lawyer. You know, chashiv. Now, maybe they're right. Maybe they're wrong.
Our shkava is based off like what's going on, like this scale down. That's what the norm is. So, like, if everything around us is changing, then we never really have a stopper.
What I'm trying to say is that there's a problem, is because we would like to believe that we're making our decisions based on intellectual decisions, that we're 18, 20, mature adults. And what's very often happening is that our decisions are made when we were 8 years old and relatively immature. And someone we were in school, and so I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And we decide, oh, I want to be a lawyer. Why do you want to be a lawyer? Because I'm just saying, because everybody wants to be a lawyer, right? Or whatever. And then we lock ourselves into a certain decision because that's where, we're in the society we're in. And then it becomes a fact of life. And to be able to, now maybe it is the right decision. There's nothing wrong with being a lawyer. Maybe it's the right decision. But you shouldn't decide to be a lawyer because you decided it when you were 8. You should decide to be a lawyer because you decided when you're 20. You shouldn't decide, and even when you're 20, your decision should be based on being able to reevaluate the situation from the eyes of, with no preconceived notions. But we walk in with preconceived notions. I remember someone told me a story that Rav Aaron Cutler was apparently quite outspoken, and he spoke at some rabbinical conference where there was a lot of modern rabbanim, maybe conservative rabbanim, etc., and he was giving the mussar. Rav Aaron, I'm sure, gave it quite strong mussar. And one of the conservative rabbis, nerve. Does he know who he's talking to? I make twice as much money as he does. Right? In other words, his perception of success, the rabbi, was how much money you make. So if I make twice as much money, where does he come to give me mussar? Right? And so the guy wasn't trying to be stupid. He was just, that's how he was taught a certain hashkafa in life, that who's successful, who makes more money. So I'm more successful than Rav Aaron Cutler because I make more money than him. So how can he give me mussar? I'm a much more successful person. I gave the guys this example. I mentioned this example a week or two ago, that I was walking in the street and a person, when I was a kid, I don't know how old I was, a teenager, probably even less, and a guy asked me, why do you wear that head cover? And I told him it's a sign of respect, because they're humbleness. God is looking down on us, so we want to be respectful. It's a show of respect to God that we want to cover ourselves. It's a sign of almost fear. I feel uncomfortable that God is staring down on me, so it's symbolic that I almost wish I could hide, because it's uncomfortable that such a great person, great being is looking at me. And this person, that's so ridiculous. Everybody knows it's so much more respectful when you take off your hat, right? Because, oh, hello. Right? Now, I was like sitting there like, you're an adult. Why in the world is it more respectful to take off your hat? Because everyone knows that. But is there any logic to that? But he just locked into his, he was taught that in school, whatever, that you want to show respect, you take off your hat and you say, so of course. So if I say differently, then I'm stupid. So we walk around life with our preconceived notions. A guy comes in and he says, you have to learn a base medrash and tell the schedule. I can never do that. Well, what makes you think you can't do that schedule? Of course I can't do that schedule. Why? I know I can't do that. On what basis are you basing that on? It's most people, believe it or not, succeed in doing base medrash schedule. Almost everybody. There are some people that they lock into their head, there's no way I can keep that schedule. Or there's no way I can do, so that's the problem I'm trying to raise. The problem is that we lock into our brain perceptions of what's right, what's morally right, what we believe in, what our dreams are, and what we're comfortable with, and what we enjoy, and who we enjoy. And we look at a guy who's succeeding. Ooh, I don't want to be like that. You know, you see a guy who's really, I don't say everybody, but, you know, sometimes you see a guy who's really, I don't know, they got all kinds of names for that, you know. I forgot away the names. In my high, I'm not in high school anymore. Right, for a guy who in Israel, they call him, he got burnt. What's it called? No, burnt. If the guy became a Haredi, they have a Nisraf. Yeah, what? Starved out. Yeah, okay. That's in the English version. In Hebrew, they call him, he was Nisraf. He said, ooh, I don't ever be like that, you know? You know? Brainwash. That's right. That's right. In other words, and we in, it is that, you know. So what happens is we become almost don't give ourselves a chance. The beauty is that there is really a window of time when a person can move forward. Rabbeinu Yoina, Rav Zuckerman used to talk about this. That Rabbeinu Yoina says that the solution for really to being about tshuva is to be able to feel you're a katan shenoydad. You know what a katan shenoydad means? That you're a newborn baby. To be able to feel that your past didn't exist. I'm starting fresh. Everything in life is new. I'm gonna. None of my old habits count. Nothing. I'm a brand new person. To a certain extent, it's pretty hard to think you're a katan shenoydad. But to a certain extent, when a person, if there's ever a time that a guy can think he's a katan shenoydad, is when he graduates high school. You know, that those few months when he moves from high school to whatever he does next, because it's a tremendous change. First of all, at the age, it's the right age. There's a certain thing about the age of teenage years that people are rebellious and they're ready to change. So there's a certain bracha in that. There's also a negative, but there's a bracha too. That older people don't find so many baal tshuvas in older people. There's a reason for that. Older people are locked in. And once you get married, you're for sure locked in. And once you have kids, you're for sure. The Rishiva is hashkafa. Those who know the Rishiva encourages, does not like the guy staying in Kolo in Queens more than 6 years. The reason is because once you're 6 years in Kolo, he's afraid they'll never go out of town. Because they're locked in, they're married, they're settled, their kids are in school. You know, you become, you feel like a bala bus. you're settled. Now I'm gonna pick up. I can't pick up and start my life all over again. I'm already settled. So once it's not just in going out of town, it's hashkafas and everything. So the age of starting fresh is really with this in these years. And moving out of high school was like a whole new beginning. It's a tremendous opportunity that, you know, I think it's like, and if you blow it, you blow it. You know, it's a scary thought. But a person who blows it, you don't always get opportunities more than once. You saw it in life. That opportunity, sometimes you do, sometimes, but you don't always. Sometimes if you don't take the first opportunity, there's no guarantee you get a second one. There are so many people, and I know someone, a relative, who is a very wealthy nursing home owner who is not happy because he wishes he was in a different profession. But he's too late. He's already a nursing home owner, you know. Can't go back to school now and do something. He realized that's not what he wanted to do in his life. Now, he's very wealthy, but that's not what he wanted to do. Okay, I know you're both thinking, oh boy, I should have that problem. Okay. But that's his problem. Anyway, so you have opportunities when you're young, especially when you graduate high school, to start fresh, to go ahead and in a certain sense convince yourself, okay, all my past hashkafas could be, I don't necessarily, I'm gonna reevaluate what's the definition of success. What's my goals in life? What am I trying to be in life? The fact that I decided when I was 10 years old what I'm going to do, I'm not going to lock myself into that. And even with that, it's not so easy. But that's the idea. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay. I have one last suggestion, and then I'm going to see if someone has something to say. There's another fascinating Rashi here. Also, I'm probably going to argue this is Sechamim. What can I do? It says that they asked the Baruch from the Mitzrayim, the Kli Kesef, and Kezav and the Simoz, right? Anyone know the Pasuk? They borrowed and they asked the Mitzrayim for the things, so they borrowed their gold and silver and also their clothes. That's the Pasuk says. I'm trying to find the Pasuk. So Rashi is Medayik from the order of the Pasuk that the thing that was the most precious, the thing that the Mitzrayim had the hardest time to lend the Jews were their clothes. The silver, okay. The gold, okay. But their clothes, they were very uncomfortable in lending that. And that they even lent their clothes, that was a tremendous chiddush. Where's the pasuk? I can't find the pasuk. Okay. So the question is, why was the clothes more harder for them to lend out than their money? And Kazvizov is much more valuable than clothes. So obviously the Sisser Chaim disagrees with me, like I always. But I think Pshat is because your clothes is who you are. And that's your identity. So many people are locked into their identity because of the way they dress. Right? Rabbi Gita tells you to get a haircut. You're kidding? Yeah, you know that. You know you're starting up with who I am. You know, you get a haircut. You know, or you tell me to change. You know, I think it's. I'm making a suggestion that if whatever you do next year, get yourself a new wardrobe. You know, what? I'm not sponsoring it, but I, you know, but that's a real. I think it's a really good suggestion because psychologically, you become. You feel you're a different person. We have guys in Beis Medrash that come and they're still dressed like high school kids. And you know, whether it's there's a certain high school type dress. And that doesn't allow you to feel that you're in Beis Medrash. Psychologically, it holds you back. You gotta dress the part. I'm not trying to say they should wear suits and not even white shirts. But you know, respectable. This is now you can be a tie. Okay, not as a tie.
Could be a cane.
No, not a cane. Okay. Anyway, that's a suggestion that when you change your externals, it helps you. Chitzonius maris apnimius. You get yourself a nice haircut.
You say that when you're actually close to it.
Okay. Hopefully, you're close to it.
I'm saying like.
Okay. Anyway, that's just a suggestion. That's a suggestion that you can go ahead. And I'm trying to find the Rashi. I can't find the Rashi. Okay, I don't find the Rashi. One second. I'm sorry to find the Rashi. Here. It says in the Pasuk, and Yud Beis Chol, Lamed Hei, U'b'nei Yisrael Osu K'dvar Moshe, V'yish'olu Mimitzrayim, Klei kesef, who klei zav, silver and gold, usmalos, and dresses, which means clothes. And the Rashi says, if I find, I hope it's the Rashi, Lamed Hey, af heim or yuchashuvas lahem, they were more important than min hakesef, min hazav, v'amuchuchar b'pasek chashiv. So whatever came last in the pasek was more chashiv. So Rashi says that it was more chashiv, their clothes, than their gold and silver. So I don't think it means that their clothes would cost more money than their gold and silver. I don't think that's what it means. What? The Egyptians. No, the Egyptians were valued their clothes. It was harder for the Egyptians to lend their clothes than to lend their gold and silver. And they had more emotional connection to their clothes. Because, see, when you see your slave wearing your hat, you know, and that's like, you know, it's crazy, you know. It just drives you crazy. When you give him your gold menorah, okay, it's not you. He's driving your car, okay, but he's wearing your shirt. This is my favorite shirt, you know. So that's me. So people somehow or another, their personality, it's very superficial. That their personality is in their clothes and their haircuts instead of really themselves. But that's how it is. And therefore, the Mitzrayim went crazy when they had to give up their clothes to the Bnei Israel. because then they're giving up themselves. So anyway, so my suggestion is, it's a good suggestion. If you want to grow, so change your clothes. Obviously, if you have good clothes now, you don't have to change them. But if there's an opportunity to try a fresh beginning, new hashkafas, new attitudes, new goals in life. You know, you can dream about becoming the Gadol Hador, whatever it is. You know, you're starting fresh. You don't have to be governed by whatever you thought in the past, and you don't have to be governed by their perception. We guys in the. I remember there was a guy came to the Israel. He was the class clown. You know, so that's it. I'm the class clown. I can't. You don't expect me to learn. I'm the class clown. But you gotta be able to start fresh. Okay. Anyway, anyone have anything to say about my wonderful? No. Yeah, it's very good. 499 out of 500 people were not able to do it. Because there's degrees. Because even if you can't do it fully, you can do it partially. There's partial credit in most things. And what we're saying is that now it's a very big problem. You don't want to be, your whole life is governed because what you decided when you were 8 years old. It's such a tragedy. Because when you're 8 years old, your mother said, you know, it'd be so nice if you were a dentist or you were a lawyer. And they put that idea in your head. And therefore, you started telling everyone, I'm going to be a dentist. And now you locked into that and you just never reevaluated it. Or you decided on what makes happiness because your English teacher read some story in school class about happiness and they gave you some perception. So now you locked in. Or you decide how many kids you're going to have because of I don't know what. So that would be a tragedy. So I'm not saying you'll be able to change fully. Maybe the people in Klal Yisrael did change a little bit, that it wasn't enough. And yeah, you're right. In order to make a total change, I would assume that they did make a certain amount of change. But to be on the level that they made enough change that they were roy to go out of Mitzrayim, so 499 flunked. And you're right, majority of people, to some extent, aren't perfect. But now is a chance to do whatever we can do. And it's a tremendous thing. It's an empowering thing. It's an opportunity to change our lives, to be something, whatever we really intellectually decide we want to be. You want to be fully, maybe not fully. But to a certain extent, that's a wonderful thing.
But if our compass are based on what's going on around us, like we said earlier, if everything's changing around us, then how do we ever have a
shkafa? Hopefully you have a brain. Sorry. At some point you use judgment, and you can't do better than that. You have to use your judgment. You know, obviously you have to decide who you want to trust and who you want to listen to and who you want to emulate. And you have to make a decision. Now this is a dangerous speech, I'm saying, because you might decide, why should I listen to the yeshiva? I'm going to go ahead and there's this rap star that I like. I think he's maybe. But to be honest, that's really what your person should do. A person should go ahead. Yeah, and you're not locked into Chafetz Chaim either. I'm not saying that, right? You go ahead and you should make intellectual decisions of what you think, but not based on. But it's the worst thing in life is you're only doing your decision because of what you were. I mean, it seems such a tragedy. Why did you do what you did? Because that's what I was taught when I was 5 years old. You should go ahead and do the best you can. What?
My parents said that I wanted to be a mentor when I was 8.
Yeah.
So is that dumb?
It might be dumb, but maybe what you should do is, to be honest, you should think about it and decide whether your parents were right or wrong. And if you decide your parents were right, so then you don't get rid of it because it's a good thing that you have that predisposition. But if you decide your parents were wrong, then you should get rid of it. You shouldn't just be doing it just because it is a little dangerous. Okay. Your life is a little dangerous.
Rebbe would say that danger is worth it?
Yeah, because I think we're talking to, hopefully, to mature people who are older people who can try and are striving to be to live moral and right lives. And yes, and they should intellectually. What else are you supposed to do? I mean, I don't know what else you do. You have to at some time make a decide, and then you feel good in the rest of your life that I thought things out. I chose my path. I didn't just go into this because, you know, this is when my father was a blacksmith and my grandfather was a blacksmith. You know, I had a guy. I talked to. I speak to him about smoking. My father smoked, my grandfather smoked, my great-grandfather smoked, and I'm smoking, you know? Okay, you know? Anyway, you know, that...
Rabbi, wouldn't you say that it's like, it's a bad idea to base your hashkafas on the world around you?
It's a ridiculous idea, because you look at the Navardic line, which we love to say, I heard this from Rabbi Brook, he used to say, the Navardic is, most people, I'm sure you heard this from your aide, most people in the world are smart or dumb. Because, well, most people are, you have to admit, the majority of people are pretty dumb. I mean, if you go, you go around, you know, the majority of people are pretty dumb. You know, it really is. It's funny almost. The guys in yeshiva used to come back from night college. They used to be laughing every day when they, you know, the kids in their class were so dumb. You know, okay, and even night college, okay, good. And then they said, yeah, okay, Queens College, yes, and then the majority of the people in the world are rich or poor. Hey, majority of people are not rich. Majority of the people in the world are happy or sad. You know, most people are not so happy. Even rich people, most of them are not so happy. So he said, so when you quote the world, you're quoting a bunch of dumb, poor, unhappy people. So why should we base our hashkafas on that? Or we base our hashkafas on television, right? A lot of it, to be honest, we see things in television, which is totally make-believe and fake, and we watch these or read these books, and, right, you know, we have people walk around Harry Potter, you know, and they get their, this is how they live their lives, based on some hashkafa that they picked up on television. But, you know, in a make-believe world. So it's a crazy thing. So we shouldn't, we should not be basing our life decisions based on something that we were taught, you know, what are we supposed to do? You have to do the best you can. You know, the Messiah Sharm says it's part of it is maybe trusting people that you trust. Okay, that could be. But you got to make a decision of what you want to do. What?
So what can you base it on? Besides the Torah, what can you base it on? Like everything?
I don't know. You got to do the best you can. If there's nothing else, then nothing else. There is such a thing. There could be people. There could be people that you respect, that you think that they really have, you know, that they're, you know, that's what the Messiah Sharon gives that mushel of, you know, the Messiah Sharon, that when you want to go on a maze and you don't know how to get to the center. And he gives this much, I know, that they used to be a kingdom. They used to make a platform in the maze, and the king used to sit on the maze and the platform in the middle, and he used to watch everyone can't find their way through the maze, and he used to have a lot of laughs, you know. But he said, if you want to get to, you know, the only thing you can do is ask the king. He's looking at the top. He can say, oh, that route is going to, you know, there's no way you can see because you're in the middle of the maze. So you can't see which one has a tree in the middle. But he can't. So there is such a thing. I happen to think of, yeah, that they're asking advice from people you trust. Could be your parents. Could be a rabbi. It could be a neighbor. It could be someone that you think that he's really thought out and he has wisdom from years of experience. There is such a thing. There's a lot of things. It's like you said, relying on the Torah. Okay. There could be. But, okay. All right.
It seems like it should be more like emotional than intellectual.
Why? Well, no, I was trying to say just the opposite. I'm trying to say that there's a problem that where our hashkafas are decided based, our hashkafas that we have, many of them are emotional. Many of them are because we grew up as slaves, so we're locked. This is what I'm comfortable with. I'm not comfortable. You're going to tell me I should have 8 kids? Ooh, I don't want to have 8 kids. My parents only had 3 kids. That's what I think is a perfect family. Why? Because that's what I'm used to. 14 kids. You're crazy. Now that's and what I'm describing is emotional. Intellectual would be maybe 14 kids is better than 3 kids. Just because my parents had 3 kids, does that mean that's the best? I don't know. Think about it. You know, try and when you're deciding your life, try and make an intellectual decision based on whatever information you have. I think that, okay.
So what's shot in the Mitzrayim?
The Mitzrayim?
I think
it's this Rabbi Twersky's word, that they were comfortable being slaves. The thought of being making your own free decision terrified them. I'm going to be in charge of myself. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm exaggerating. Terrifying doesn't have to mean on an extreme level, but on some level, they were very uncomfortable of not being a slave, because they're not used to being. And they're used their whole lives, they're slaves. The whole lives, they don't have to decide what they're eating for breakfast, what they're eating for lunch, what they're eating for supper, where they're going to go, what they're going to do. Everything's and always they're being told, you're going to leave Mitzrayim, you're a free man, you make your own decisions. Make my own decisions? How am I going to make my own decisions? It's a scary thought. So there's a certain comfort level, I'd rather just stay the way I am. Okay, just change a whole new life. So now I don't say totally, but on some level, they were not happy about the prospects of leaving. So therefore, they weren't worthy of leaving. Doesn't mean that if you would have asked them, do you prefer to leave or to stay? They said, we prefer to stay. But they weren't jumping for joy to leave because they had a certain hesitation because it's not comfortable. They're used to it. There's a comfort level. People have comfort levels. Twersky, I'm not a Bucky in this, but he writes that shot Brown. What's his name?
Charlie Brown.
Right. That's his whole big theory. Charlie Brown is locked in to his being a victim. Because that's his happiness. And he can't change. What?
Wasn't class already free and not slaves anymore? Like
they're still basically free. They're in Mitzrayim. There's a certain... They're still... Called now they were in Mitzrayim. There's a certain extent of Vodim. Maybe they're not doing the work, but they're... Certain amount of Vodim.
So what's the most effective way to get out of the mindset of that you're in?
It's hard. There's no secret that... It's not like there's a secret way of doing it. You just... The realization... Sometimes the realization of the problem is half the solution. Only half. So the realization that maybe some of my decisions are not based on intellectual or really what's right, but just because of childhood facts or the things I saw on television or things that people told me who weren't so necessarily right, and I got locked in from a young age in certain hashkafas, that realization at least gives you a chance to rethink it. If you're, it gives you a chance. And I suspect that won't work fully because, psychologically, you'll still be uncomfortable. That's not me. I look in the mirror and I'm going to see a man. Can I imagine myself with that guy with that baldy haircut and a hat? It's a scary thought that I should become like that. It's frightening, But, at least the realization that maybe that's really the right thing. Maybe that's a happier existence. Maybe that guy living in Yerushalayim with 14 kids who ate at my house, maybe he's happier.
Did he look happy?
Well, I don't know. He told me he was in Kaham Hasidim, and there was anyone was there, and there was a fight with a Lebedik.
Yeah.
He was enjoying the hack.
Yeah.
Right. They're throwing herring, the herring throwing to the contest, Okay. Anyway.
Is there any way to take advantage of this midah, or is completely?
I know the thing is the realization that this is a problem.
Is there any upside to the midah?
There is an upside. Yeah, if you decide that what you were locked in when you were a kid is a good thing, so then keep it locked in. But there's a realization. I'm saying there's a realization. This is a problem. that many people are not ready to change because of silly reasons. Because you don't want to be Charlie Brown. Okay.
Can you?
Who, Charlie Brown?
No, the guy that had over.
Well, he was. I don't know if he was happy or not.
Ravi, it's not an unhealthy way to help you grow. So just